Do you want more energy, better sleep, and better health? Who wouldn't? Get a free Scalar Light no obligation 15-day trial at scalarlight.com.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio, your feel-good radio. On today's show, I have a guest, Simon Garty, who explores gardening through creating green spaces in urban areas. His work is based in London, but his initiative Progress has gone on to work in the Karoo Desert of South Africa, establishing old ancient Amazonian planting techniques to regenerate the desert. And his work kind of underpins the meaning of bringing gardening away from just being a hobby, but to a way of life, a way of incorporating communities and people and connecting with each other through food, through the love of good produce, organic growing, the list goes on. So I'm going to stop talking and let you listen to Simon's fascinating story about how his life kind of transitioned into his work with Progress. Get comfortable. Enjoy. Thank you. Hi, Simon, and welcome to the Environment and Conservation Show. It's great to have you here today. Walking around your garden.
Yes, indeed. Here you go. Look, it's my family's garden with loads of lovely fruit trees. Thank you very much for having me. The first interview of 2021. So that's very nice.
Ooh. So first, tell me about yourself and about maybe a little bit about Progress and your journey into gardening. That's quite a broad and general question, but...
Yeah, I hope you're sitting comfortably. There's quite a lot to talk about. So my name's Simon Garty. I'm 47 years old, and I've been growing organic food since I was about 3 or 4. My mother and father taught me how to grow fruits and vegetables, play chess, mathematics literacy, and the difference between 2 and 3 dimension before the age of 5. So I've always kind of carried that with me, how to articulate the difference between 2 and 3 dimension on drawing wise. My mother's from Georgetown, from Guyana, next to Venezuela, next to Suriname and above Brazil. And my father is from Ghana, from Winneba, and his family are chiefs of tribes in that area as well. So I'm the first in my generation in this country, and I've been brought up the same way that they would have been brought up in their countries. And it's a kind of old school way of education, a lot of home education. And I was raised in Streatham Hill in Lambeth, Streatham Hill, and brought up in different parts, but born in Camberwell and raised in Streatham Hill and Brixton from very, very young. And so South London born and raised. And my father used to grow his own organic foods in the garden, make his own wine, rosé wine. And born in 73, went to state school in Lambeth, and then my father took me out of state school and put me through proficiency tests for private school in South London, and these tests led me to go to private school until the age of 15-16 years old. And from there I left private school, further educated myself. I'm an artist and designer by virtue. And so I've always kind of carried that with me, some of the humanities and the practical side of things from when I was younger stayed with me. I'm not really an academic, but I mean, academics is definitely a huge part of my work, our work, I should say, sorry. And then from school, further educated myself, went through a lot of art colleges. So I studied photography, I studied textile printing, I studied spatial design. But at the same time I was studying, I was getting in a lot of trouble with the law. So I had a kind of like quite a flowery past, if pardon the pun, but I had quite a flowery past. And the authorities in the UK wanted to put me in prison for 4.5 years for various charges from when I was very, very young. You know, rolling with the wrong people, making bad choices. Luckily, with the love of my family and, you know, being saved by the grace of whoever or whatever was protecting me, I wasn't incarcerated. In fact, to be fair, the private education that I had put me in circles where my friends' parents were, you know, like high court judges, etc. So they would be writing references for me while I was going to court. And I was in court, I was in like getting charged and going to court on top of other charges and going to court. So it was quite a troublesome time. But, being in that kind of life and having the fear of God put to you by things that were happening that could end your life, kind of like, you know, encouraged me to get out of that circle. Things when we were, you know, like teenagers and in our early 20s are a lot different from the youngsters that are living right now. So we had a different perception of what was happening on the streets, and also a different outlook on how we would be getting in and out of situations, which is completely different from the young people, that their perception right now. I mean, I work in gang intervention, youth offending as we speak, but I'll talk about that in a bit. So while I was studying, my last bit of studies was at St. Martin's Art College, and I studied spatial design. And my studies were based around how green spaces were used since the beginning way before Egypt, Dogons and civilizations, Nubian civilizations before Egypt, what green spaces meant to civilizations up until now, city planning, how we interact with green spaces and how green spaces interact with us. And one part of my research when I was studying was to do with going into drug rehabilitation and speaking to people about how interacting with plants could help them with their 12 steps and how this could help to have some kind of self-reflection towards them. And one guy I spoke to, this was probably actually a pivotal fact for me to actually do the work I was doing, part of it anyway, was he said that if he grew a plant from a seed and it produced a fruit or a vegetable, that would have a positive effect on him and he'd be able to pass that on to others. So therefore, it was a snowball effect. Now, part of my studies when I was doing this, the research on how cities were planned was based on emotional quotient, how we react with situations, with individuals and with groups, and how they react with us, and getting a positive and productive outcome from our interaction with people. And this kind of all fell into place in regards of looking at how we can plant up, green up the city more, and how we can use this as a tool to encourage more conducive communities, a better state of well-being, and some kind of growth development with us physically, mentally, individually, and collectively. So when I finished studying, I had this template, and it was theory. I mean, it was theory, but I'd put it to the test in regards of taking it out to the community and speaking to people and, you know, speaking to people that were in great adversity. You know, my idea was to see if greening could help with diverse and harder to reach of our cities. And the point would be based around trying to start to re-sculpt where we lived so it could be, I mean, it sounds like a pipe dream, but, you know, so it could be more of a conducive environment for us to live in, especially bringing up youngsters as well. I went to Lambeth Council, and Lambeth Council are not like, they haven't got the greatest reputation, even up until now. And so they were like, look, we can't do anything for you. You're going to have to go and find your way. Look, here's a regeneration scheme. Go and work with them. So I went to Clapham Park Regeneration Scheme, which is in between Brixton Hill and Clapham. I started working with this regeneration scheme, which was basically turning old social housing blocks into newer developments to try and encourage better environment for people to live in a harder to reach area. So I started working there from 2004, 2003, 2004. I worked three jobs which this was one of the jobs, 7 days a week for 3 years. I didn't pay myself for progress for those 3 years. And I employed horticulturalists and agriculturalists to work with me to redevelop spaces in primary schools, working with all the children, but primarily with children with autism, behavioral disorder issues and attention deficit issues, and seeing if this kind of self-reflective and collective tool, team building, you know, tactile, something really practical with an end outcome could be something that could help the children. And what we did notice after, you know, the first year, the first 12 months, is when you do a food event, everybody comes out the woodwork to come and eat. So this was a way for us to look at how do we engage with the wider community. And the wider community was basically based around going into local parks, going into open spaces, redeveloping spaces with a ground-up approach, speaking to local people, getting them involved with the decision-making. So it's taken out of the hands of the council that might be using a top-down approach, and getting them to be involved with resculpting their city. Since then, we've worked, since 2003, 2004, we've worked with 8 to 10 boroughs, and we've probably built about 30 or 40 gardens in total. Not that we're actually counting like it's a notch on the belt, but we've been continually building. But what we did is in about 2009, we started to hone down the amount of boroughs and the amount of work that we're doing to concentrate on quality rather than quantity. Because as you know, from even as a hobby, gardening is 24/7. And to keep up that amount of gardens, especially growing food all year round, is a lot of work, especially if it's a small to medium operation. So in regards of our outputs have been working with youth offending, gang intervention, social prescribing, housing estates management, and basically the community. You know, we're going out and working with people that maybe don't have green spaces themselves or feel a little bit excluded from society, feel a little bit isolated, working with people with differing levels of mental health issues or mobility issues, and giving them a chance to feel less isolated and more included in society through the activity. And the thing is also, you've got to remember, when people come and get involved, they don't necessarily have to actually physically come and work. They might just want to come and have a chat, or might want to just sit down and feel like they're being included while people are actually working at the same time. So it's an all-round well-being tool, mental and physical, positive, transferable skill sets are being put into place. You're having fun. You're growing food better than the supermarkets. You know, I don't want to name any supermarkets, but we're growing food better than the supermarkets. We go around the world collecting heritage seeds. So 2017, 2018, we started spreading our wings and going out to other countries, researching, collecting seeds. And 2019, we started doing research in Africa. And our model type, which was redevelopment of spaces, film and photography, and putting public art into the gardens. So we encourage underground and unknown artists to come and get involved with our garden spaces and put up murals, etc., with the local community. That can be a reflection of hope, reflection of beautification, and just a reflection of spirit, raising spirits in the gardens that we're building. And we were invited by UNICEF into to look at the feasibility of getting involved in South Africa. And from then, we have actually been working in South Africa since 2020. We worked with some NGOs, but now we're actually working directly with the communities ourselves, and working with a filmmaking and a production team called Tuba Films, who's actually a family friend of mine since I was 11 years old. And we're redeveloping small to medium-sized plots in Africa at this present moment in time for areas of empowerment, education, employment, and once again, dignity and spirit raising, so that people can feel like they haven't been forgotten, and they can know also that they don't have to continually feel like they have to put their hands out. Once you have a first cycle of growing food, you can produce your own seeds and start to be a little bit more self-sufficient. And this is a world over thing in regards to developing countries. And you could imagine that we're in a developed country right now, And we've got food banks. Who would ever thought that we would have food banks in the UK? So to be self-sufficient in being able to, if you are mobile and able to grow food out of pots, to grow food out of small spaces, to grow food out of containers and suffice yourself and maybe actually supplement some of your weekly buy with food that you can grow yourselves. So that's me in a small nutshell. I mean, I'm sure I've left out a lot, but that's kind of like the framework of my journey over 47 years.
Wow. I've been totally taken in by your story. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Must have been quite a transition coming from London, going over to South Africa and starting there. I mean, how did that relationship develop from one community from one side of the world to another on a totally different place?
You know, the funny thing is that South Africa, especially Cape Town, is very reminiscent of South America. And my present wife is from Brazil. And Cape Town is very, very similar to Sao Paulo. So when I got there, I was like, wow, this place actually reminds me of Brazil. Extreme wealth division. You know, the reason why it kind of reminded me of Brazil is because you see children and grandparents homeless, begging on the street. And you don't really see that in London.
Mm.
And it's a very, very harsh thing to have to swallow. Do you know what I'm saying? I want to give money to everybody when I see people like that.
I know.
I want to give food to everybody when I see people like that. It reminds me of my family. So I'm a natural problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me to go to, I'll build a garden anywhere on this planet. It doesn't matter. Just give me the brief and we'll work out how to do it. We've just built two gardens in the middle of the Karoo Desert in South Africa. The average heat there is about 35 to 40 degrees. Extremely arid land. Yeah, and you can imagine that in some parts that have got little or no shade, which is a lot of that space, you've got dry soil going down. You know, you will dig a meter down and you'll still have the same soil that you've got on the top. So what we did in that respect is we took a 2,500-year-old Amazonian fertility technique called biochar. So what you do is you create a form of charcoal from wood. You're burning wood from the top down. So normally when you set a fire, you'll set a fire from the bottom up. With this process, you burn the wood from the top down. The wood does not turn to ash. It turns to charcoal. And then what you do is you wash the wood. You bathe it in water and then inoculate it with stuff like sea kelp. Yeah.
Mm.
And this mixture, then you mix in with the soil and you can fertilize soil with one process for the equivalent of about a decade. So this is exactly what we just did in, that's a simplistic form of doing it. We can send you some links on whatever platform you have for your listeners and your readers.
Yeah, great.
This is what we did right there is problem solve. We spoke to people, indigenous people that work in the area and have to create fertile areas for herb growth or for food growth and tried to work out how we were going to fertilize 600 to 1,000 square meters of growing space with the tools and equipment and the knowledge that we had. And we came up with this and the food that, I mean, we planted the food in raised beds that we had like countersunk into the ground about a month and a week ago. And the food's growing absolutely beautifully. I think that we're going to produce some of the most fertile food growing spaces in that town for a long time. So the other thing to remember is what we're doing here is we're creating history. In Africa, we're creating history. And unfortunately, I mean, I don't want to get too personal or political here. But unfortunately, the government has forgotten the people in certain countries. And you've got to think that the majority of developing countries, the people, without the people that have been forgotten, those countries will crumble. They are the actual the embodiment of the system of the country in regards of how it's supported.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to show them respect and dignity. And a lot of these countries that we are working in or going to be working in, the people that we're working with, the communities that we're working with are left to live and to fend for themselves in absolutely horrific conditions. I mean, I'm sure that if you did a little bit of research and looked at some of the countries that we're working with and saw the conditions that people are living in, you'll be probably pretty taken back yourself.
Mm, I can imagine. So it's about teaching people to be self-sufficient when their government isn't able to or doesn't want to step in and provide for them on a basic level.
Yeah, we don't like to use the word teaching. I think the most important thing to understand that this is empowerment. A lot of people on this planet have it within them, the knowledge within them, be it from their ancestors somewhere down the line, to understand how to grow food. You know, this is a primal instinct of ours to be able to put a seed in the ground and grow fruit or vegetables or plants. So we're not teaching anybody anything. We're empowering them and giving them a little bit of a nudge and reawakening something that was inside them already.
Mm.
But I don't think I think you're definitely right in regards of the human rights side of things. I don't think that we are, with everywhere that we work in the developed world, we are calling out the government, but we're definitely asking the powers that be internationally to please wake up to the fact that this kind of movement needs to be in schools. Social education doesn't only need to be in schools, but it needs to be something where people could be signposted to amenities for society. This is very, very important. Some people can't afford to go to school. Some people don't have that liberty. Some people will go throughout their whole life without being able to read and write because of formative years where that's been taken away from them. So this needs to be something that's a social movement. And it is either social education in schools, institutional in regards of being in the institution, but not in an institutional way, and some kind of amenity outside of the school environment as well.
Completely. And we're not just talking about in South Africa, but here as well, right? Because there's 100%. Certainly not enough outdoor education in schools or green spaces.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I think that the practicality of using your hands and hand-to-eye connection, sensory environments, you know, this leads onto all kinds of knowledge basis, primary knowledge basis, but also this leads on to all kinds of avenues for you to understand not only yourself, the environment that you're in, but others around you as well. And this is very, very important. And this is not, and this, you're speaking to somebody that's not an academic that works in the academic field and is highly regarded for the work that I do in the academic field as well. And I'm not an academic in the slightest. So I'm proof in the pudding that you can do something like this from a practical basis and still get high regard or esteem for the work you do by academics internationally as well.
And what
kind of... I'm not blowing my own trumpet, by the way.
Just a little bit, but that was good.
Oh, am I? All right, sorry.
I allow it. It's fine.
Okay, fair enough.
And what kind of, you know, when you're working with youth, what kind of response do you see in the children that you work with?
It depends on what age group, you know, little ones. I mean, primary school, preschool, they're just fascinated with being outside and they love to play. You know, it's the science of play, isn't it? You know, imagination, play, seeing new things, insects, different parts of the year and things appearing or things disappearing through, depending on what time of the year it is. So it's just fascination with being outside and being allowed to, in a safe environment, just explore and see what you might not see on an everyday basis, and being able to answer some questions, and have them answered in a way that you could, as a child, build a little bit of knowledge going forward. You know, so it's just fascination with little ones.
Mm.
I think the older ones and the teenagers, etc., they love to build, they love to construct stuff. They like to, they're very, very proud about giving back to their communities. And, you know, the communities are their immediate families or wider. So with the older ones, it's, I suppose the press in this country are, the press in this country vilify young people. And, you know, you've got to remember that there's young people out here that are doing amazing things on an hourly basis in this country. And the press needs to fix up and start telling some really beautiful stories and stop vilifying young people. They're not all bad. That's a small percentage of them. Mm. And to home in on that means that you're not looking at this in the right way. These young people are the future of this country. So we need to encourage them and nurture them the same way we're talking about nurturing food and nurturing plants. You know, we need to take care of them and be mindful of the way that we're representing them as well. Young people in this country are very, very forward and very smart indeed. They just, some of them are just in a you know, in an adverse environment that is ever changing as well.
Do you feel that certain races are excluded from talks about climate action? And particularly talking about how Indigenous people and their own techniques don't often get a say in solutions for some of, like, you know, the desertification for a lot of the climate change that we're seeing. Are they being given enough of a platform to talk about what their solutions are?
I'm not an expert on who's talking about climate change, etc. But I will say in the horticultural and agricultural world internationally that it is probably very much middle to upper class white people that you're going to see speaking about this, and there's very, very little representation by Indigenous people of color in high, middle to higher management in regards to these fields. So yeah, representation is basically, it's not what it should be. And therefore, people of color and Indigenous people are fighting their way through, even though they're doing so much. I couldn't tell you about statistics or the ratio of Indigenous people or people of color that are holding office in agricultural, horticulture in a medium to high position. But if you see this, if you look at TV programs or you're looking on the internet and you're trying to find people of color in these lead positions, you're going to find very few. So not a lot has changed over decades, to be fair. Unfortunately, even though there's some amazing work being done by Indigenous people all over this planet.
What does the word progress mean to you?
It means taking one step forward at a time. It means doing a little bit of something every day towards your dream. It means being very, very aware of history and using giants that we have, that have paved the way for us, and things that they've done to go forward and to build. We have to be legends like the people that were before us. You know, this isn't, life is not cheap, and we can all be legends. You know, don't ever let anybody tell you can't do what you want to do. That's ridiculous. Progress is about going forward and taking note of what you're doing. This is very, very important. Progress is about positivity. Progress is also about reality as well. It's not all good. And we need to take the good and the bad and turn that into something that can be seen as building. Progress is about a ground-up approach. We're adhering to every single person that we work with, and we don't make moves without the people that we're, that are our recipient base, telling us their wants and needs, and then going forward with those opinions and voices. It encompasses all of what I've just said, and there's probably a lot more, but it's also about high impact and ambition. We've got to be ambitious. Our work has to speak for itself, and it speaks for itself through the communities that we work with. They speak for us. We don't need to speak. They can speak for us.
And that brings me on to our final question, which is how can listeners act, get involved, help or donate?
Good question. You know what? They can contact us through our website, which is www.thisisprogress.org.uk. or www.thisisprogress.co.uk. Both of them direct you to the website. Get involved. Contact us. Let's have a conversation. Tell us about yourself. Tell us what you want to do, where you live. You know, maybe your contribution could be us sending you some seeds and you're growing some food yourselves. Not contributions, not just to do with getting involved with our project. Contributions to do with building around you and your community as well. You know, so, and I'm not talking about building a garden. I'm talking about building as in communication and involvement. And, you know, this is a global movement. You know, I don't want to get up on my soapbox and start shouting and stuff, but this is something that needs to be pushed in every corner of this planet. You know, rewilding, reforestation, yeah, getting environments back to some of these environments that we're working with have gone through so much degradation. They need to be brought back to their natural state. You know, we need to understand as human beings that we are part of this ecosystem. We think that we're not part of the ecosystem. There's no difference from us. There's no difference from us than another part of nature. Why do we think we're so different? I'm confused. Actually, I'm not confused, but I'm confused why people take themselves away from the understanding that we are part of life's cycle. We're part of nature's cycle. And we need to really, really consider our contribution to this planet. So how to get involved? Contact us. Get on our website. Contact us. We're on Instagram as well, at Progress London is our Instagram and our Twitter. Even just for a chat, contact us for a chat. You know, we're open. We've got part of the business in Africa now, the foundational business here in the UK, and we're spreading our wings right now as well. So we're devising a skeleton, which is a modular template, which we're going to take around the world and see if we can help with capacity building, community development, empowerment, and create some jobs and betterment of some lives through the work that we're doing as well. People think that we're a gardening outfit. Some people think we're a gardening outfit. I think it's way more than that. You know, we work in the development of us as a human community. That's the basis of what we do. So, yeah, just contact us. If you want to get involved, contact us, and then we can have a further talk. I wouldn't want to say any more than that kind of commitment, because that's enough for now, I think.
Simon, thank you so much for sharing, for being on the show, for spreading your knowledge, your wisdom and positivity. So thank you for that.
No, I mean, thank you very much for giving us this platform. And any way that we can help your movement as well, please let us know, because we'd be more than happy to do that. And keep on sharing the light and love to everybody as well. It's very important.
Always. And I hope that your words spread far and wide.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
You take care, yeah?
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Hope you enjoyed. You've been listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Feel free to follow me on Instagram at Yasmin Anta. And please like and share this podcast if you enjoyed it. Just as an optional closing note, I know that was a lot of listening, so I want to present you an opportunity to journal, meditate, to maybe even just sit and listen to the sounds of nature. Just think about what your connection is. Maybe can you give a bit more? What kind of things do you want to change in your life to work more with nature? Those are just pointers, but this is an opportunity to kind of just sit and absorb all of that information and inspiration that Simon gave us. So I will leave you with some beautiful nature sounds that I have put together. So enjoy, and see you next time. Thanks. So I hope you enjoyed those sounds of nature just for those last few minutes. If you came up with anything that you journaled or thought of during that time, please record it, send it to us, and we can voice it on Voice of the People. Thank you.